humble and confident, curious and convicted. Oftentimes these two qualities, these values, these virtues, they can seem to be in direct opposition to each other. We know humility and curiosity, those things are vital to our own learning and growth, as well as our ability to build relationships and empower people within our program. Yet at the same time, we know we need to be confident and convicted. Our team does not need insecure leaders, ones who are shaky and inconsistent on their decisions. They need someone who can show them the way. We all struggle, though, as leaders at some point with humility or confidence, and sometimes even both of those things. And so that's what we're talking about today in the podcast. We're going to talk about the challenges and how to lead with both humility and conviction. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurban. I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts today, Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butter. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which supports leaders and their teams to build extraordinary cultures through one-to-one coaching, consulting, online training, and speaking. To learn more, I recommend starting with these three steps: reading my book, The Culture System; secondly, subscribing to the TOC newsletter; and lastly, getting trained through our Transformational Coaching and Culture Certification Program. You can do all these things and learn more about TOC, as well as access our endless amounts of free resources, all at tocculture.com. To learn more about Betsy Butterick and her work as a leadership coach, coaching coaches, go to betsybutterick.com. All right, Nate, Betsy, I'm excited for our conversation today, especially after just having a really great conversation with Brian Levinson on the podcast, where we were kind of talking about polarities and how they show up for athletes, how they show up for coaches. And one of those polarities that we explored in that conversation that I want to continue and unpack with you guys today is the polarity of confidence or conviction and then humility and curiosity, and how that shows up for coaches and the challenges that it can create. For myself, I know this: when I started to go through some changes and some transformation in my own coaching, I started to get more curious around transformational coaching and leadership and how I could be better. I actually started to struggle with my own confidence, right? I think I would say I was a pretty confident and convicted coach early on. I thought I knew more, way more than I did about coaching. And so then I start to go and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm questioning everything. Like, how could I be better? And I'm asking players for feedback, asking parents for feedback, working with a coach and a mentor. And yet in that transformation, that change, yeah, that confidence, that conviction was sometimes shaken, right? As you're getting all those different inputs and you're making changes, you're not sticking to what seems comfortable for you. So I know this is a place that a lot of our coaches that we work with struggle as well too, because they're going through similar changes and transformations. And so I kind of just want to throw it over to you guys here to start off with, of just where you've seen coaches maybe struggle in this area of confidence and conviction, or maybe even that humility and curiosity.
What comes up for me when you're starting down this path, and there's a lot that comes up, but the thing that is most present in my field of vision is, what is a coach's relationship with saying, I don't know? And this is different for a lot of coaches depending on where they are in their career. It's like, if you're a new coach, whether you've been coaching for a while or not, let's say you're new to a program, you just got hired, I think there's this felt responsibility to know. Like, I was hired for a reason. I'm the person with the plan. And here's what it is. I convinced the hiring committee, and now I need to convince my team. So there's this place of knowing, or this maybe felt need to show others that we are confident in our knowledge, in our expertise, and here's why. And then there's, you know, as you were mentioning transformational coaching, there's this absolute benefit to not knowing, because with that curiosity, we get the information that probably allows us to be more effective, especially if it is with a new role or with a new team. So automatically for me, what comes up is, what's an individual's relationship or perception of what it means to not know? Do they see it as weakness? Do they see it as opportunity? And where, how does that apply to their current context?
Yeah, I think for me, JP, you know, one of the things that just comes to mind is it almost feels like a cycle that we go through as coaches. You know, you take a new job, as Betsy said, you're hired for what you know. So you bring in your system and you bring in your philosophy and you're implementing your ideas. And then if things don't go well after a year or two, all of a sudden it's like we progress to this place of, well, what's wrong? What do we need to change? What have I done differently? And so in the place of losing that confidence, we swing the door wide open to outside opinion, inside opinion, you know, questioning everything. And it feels like sometimes we can lose our way when we sway too far in that direction. You know, we perhaps lose the things that we were once anchored to, whether that's in our systems of play or our thoughts about culture or interactions with players. You can take that and manifest it in lots of different ways. And sometimes coaches come out of that with a refinement of, you know, a philosophy from where they started. And sometimes they get totally lost, you know, and the only thing that they can do is really start over again and reevaluate. And I think back to even Pete Carroll, you know, when he was fired in the NFL and went through a year there of just reevaluating everything. It seems, at least the way that his book presents it, it was done in a very healthy way, where he was examining his core beliefs, but also then questioning how could this be done better. So I think there's a healthy way to do it. But I also think there are traps at both ends of that spectrum where we can fall into a confidence or a conviction where we're just not open to new ideas at all. And that can get us in some trouble. And the other side where we don't stand for anything, we find uncertainty, we lose our confidence and can't be effective there either.
Yeah. And it's our team needs both, right? They need the confident, convicted coach. But they also need the curious, humble coach that's open to learning and knows that they can do a better job. And always grow. I'm curious, you know, when it comes to our awareness as a coach in this, you know, I was saying earlier how I was a really confident and convicted coach early in my career. And then I also am just questioning if that was actually true. Like, I think there's moments where I actually have doubt creep in and as a coach, and yet I don't really acknowledge those doubts, that lack of confidence. And I put on the facade of like, I know it all. Like I have to seem like I know it on a know it all. And I kind of fool myself as a coach through that. I don't know if that resonates with either of you and some of your journeys or work with coaches, but I feel like that might resonate with some other coaches out there.
Well, I think one thing, JP, when you think about the way that confidence manifests itself for coaches, I think oftentimes it's a coping strategy. Right. I mean, you go in and you lose a game or, you know, take a particular direction. It doesn't work out. You have an interaction with a player and it doesn't work out. Or, you know, goodness gracious, with today's social media environment, every decision is questioned and analyzed from lots of different perspectives. And so because we're susceptible to so many outside and inside opinions, I think the safest place to be is to build this wall around us that says, I know what I'm doing. I hide behind my record. I hide behind my championships. I hide behind the things that have worked for me in the past. And I use those results to justify where we are. But also, I get a little bit stuck there because there is a bit of fear when it comes to admitting maybe I don't know, or maybe that strategy didn't work. And if that didn't work, and if I don't know, what are my players going to think? What are the parents saying up in the stands? You know, what's the media going to write when we're experimenting with some different things that don't seem to be working out? And so I think it is a bit of a tightrope where on the one hand, especially if you look at the last 50 years of coaching, you know, we've had this top-down command and control model for so long, right? And we are expected to have the answers and know the direction and be the central leader. And now the things that we're talking about here about having curiosity and working with players and, you know, all of these sort of more modern coaching approaches require some vulnerability and they require some humility that, quite frankly, many of us may not be real comfortable or even very skilled at walking in.
Yeah, and Nate, I think you hit it there when you said that vulnerability is not something we're comfortable with, that fear of judgment of, well, if I don't know or if I ask, what message is that sending? How is that going to be perceived by other people? Where I see this show up for some of the coaches that I've worked with is, well, if I start asking my players now, I'm effectively inviting the inmates to run the prison, was a way it was termed to me. If I ask more questions, then I'm giving over control. And for me, what's interesting about that is it's not necessarily asking more questions, it's what questions are you asking? There's a big difference if I'm asking a player like, tell me how I can effectively coach you, you know, or how do you want to be coached? While our intention is positive, I want to know what's effective for you, an athlete, so that I can make adaptations to my style. Sometimes that's taken to extremes where now the expectation, despite the good intention of the question, is I will only ever coach you exactly as you've explained to me you want or need to be coached. So it's not necessarily if I ask questions, it's what questions are we asking for what purpose? And then in that conversation, what new expectations are we setting or even present that we need to be aware of so that we don't tip further into the, well, in being vulnerable or exploring some of my doubt, I've now ceded control in places where I don't feel comfortable with those individuals being in control in that way. So I think that's sometimes where we trip ourselves up is like, oh no, I can't ask. Because if I ask, then they're going to think I don't know what I'm doing, or they're going to tell me what I need to do. And now I've lost my power, authenticity, integrity as a coach.
Yeah. And so much the modern coaching process, though, to be effective today, is saying we have to move to a place where we ask questions, we bring them into the process. And I would say even, I mean, it's not that you're giving up control, because we don't have as much control as we think we have in these situations so often, right? When you were sharing there earlier, it got me thinking around, you know, we talk about false humility. I think maybe there's even potentially false confidence that we can have as a coach, you know, that is just not really authentic and really where we're at. And maybe that's somewhat connected to imposter syndrome, but I want to kind of move into where this actually shows up in coaching, right? Because we're talking, you know, kind of 40,000 foot view here of this ideas of confidence and conviction, but you know, where do we really see coaches struggle to maybe have the conviction that they need to have, or maybe they struggle to have the humility that they have? What are some areas that you guys see this?
Accountability for me, JP, is one of those areas where I often see coaches struggle between, okay, do I tell them what they should do in this situation? Or do I tell them, you know, this is the standard, this is the thing I feel confident and convicted about when it comes to our program, this is a standard and you're either above the line or below the line? Or do I adopt more of a curiosity, more of a humbleness of this is where the standard was, and I see that that's largely not working. There's a lot of friction, a lot of resistance. What's that about? So coming in with things that are related to oftentimes standards of the program or hallmarks, pillars, cultural values, that's sometimes where I see coaches very much in conflict with, is what's needed here confidence? Is it assertiveness? Or is it more of a humble or genuine curiosity to find out why isn't this working? Like I can push and I can affirm, or I can maybe open and be a little less rigid in service of discovering like what will get us back on track in these areas that are really foundational to who we are and how we do this thing together.
Yeah, Betsy, I think, you know, what comes to mind for me is just the challenge of collaboration, right? So if I want to work with my players and we want to co-create an experience with each other, whether that's culturally or that's what we're running on offense or how we're going to defend, there's this give and take, this dance between I have ideas because this is all that I think about and I've watched all the film and I'm, you know, have studied over the years, right? And have the files for these coaches that we're competing against. And yet I want to involve our players in that decision-making process at the same time. And I think where does it go awry? Well, you have some coaches that say this is the way and players either fall in line or they don't, and you struggle to get buy-in there. Or you have, you know, coaches that ask too open-ended questions and just say, well, what do you think we should do, when the players aren't even necessarily equipped to be able to answer that question because they don't have the same experience or knowledge or backgrounds that you have as the coach. And again, that could be cultural, that could be schematic, it could be anything. I think there's a dance there with parents as well. You know, one of the things that I think is a struggle, especially when you take over a new program, is that you want to establish some boundaries, right? You want to establish what the role of the parent's going to be, what the role of the coach is going to be, but you don't want to come off like an asshole when you're doing it, right? Like, how do you open the door and say, this is also a collaboration in a sense where we're trying to create an experience for the sports parent as well, but we want to do that in a healthy way. I want to build relationships with you, but I don't want to necessarily, you know, have X, Y, and Z conversations with parents during the season, or if we do, we want to do it in a certain way. And so it can just be a difficult path to navigate there between what shoe I should wear, so to speak, depending on who I'm communicating with, when and why.
JP, the word on the street is you have a book about sports parents. So I'd love to get your take on, you know, how does this show up for you in the research that you've done, in the conversations that you've had, in the recommendations that you make in the book? Like, where do coaches find this balance of confidence and humility when it comes to parents?
Yeah, I think so often it's while we want to bring these two things together, we have to probably lean a little bit more and start from a place more often than not of curiosity and humility, especially when it comes to sports parents. I think there is a reality that they are oftentimes more of an expert on their child than we are. And rather than seeing it as like I'm giving up control or I'm inviting problems into my situation, when we start to see the collaboration, the feedback that we can get from parents, we can get from players, or we can get from even our staff, we see that as necessary and really valuable information that can help us to be more effective. It doesn't mean that we're always going to take it and say, now I have to change because they said I had to do this X, Y, or Z. But it does, when we learn other people's truths, their truths, that helps us to do a bit more effective job. And to be blind to others' truths is to really not be able to fully operate within the reality of our situation as a coach. And so we have to really be open and curious. But at the same time, there is the challenge of, you know, the parent feedback or player feedback, and it starts to create narratives and stories, and all of a sudden this gets out of control. And I think one of the hardest things that coaches struggle with is we hear the player, we hear the parent, we even hear our assistant coach with their feedback, and we don't agree with it. And then we make a decision and we're going to move forward, and it's not going to be taking on their suggestion. And so that's, I think, so often is our fear that of reaching out is, well, if I ask these questions and they don't get what they want, then now I'm losing credibility and trust. And so it's a tough place, I think, for coaches to navigate because of that reason as well.
You talked earlier about traps, JP, and as you were talking, one that came up for me is being curious one time. So, okay, I'm new. I'm going to start with curiosity. And okay, I got this information that now helps me create this narrative, but then we're not continually curious. And so over the course of a season, or as a player is with us for the duration of their time in the program, they've changed, but we never revisit that curious state. And so we stick with a narrative that for us stays true, but for a player may have changed. And that's where I see coaches get stuck too, is like, well, I tried the curious thing and I got this thing and now I can go back to being confident. Or now I can go back to, you know, here's the plan given the information that I garnered and the narrative that I've created. So it's almost this need to, you know, be in constant flux between I'm confident with what I know now and I know that I don't yet know what's going to be next, but I have this commitment to checking in about it.
And I think the curiosity in many of these conversations is, sometimes it's a false curiosity that we try as coaches. We ask the one question, back to your one of the questions we're asking, but we're not really seeking to understand. And people know if we're really listening, I think, at times, or if we're just saying, well, we got any feedback. Okay, got you. And we move on from it. So I think so much of it is how we listen in these moments. How do we really show authentic curiosity and humility so that people really feel like we're really at least considering their feedback and their perspectives.
JP, you asked about traps before, and another big one that I see come up for coaches is when it comes to recruiting a potential student athlete and their parents. There's the mindset that, oh, I need to be really confident and clear in my communication to this athlete and their parents about how they fit into our program, the value that they're going to add, the plan that I have for their growth and development during their time here. Especially with the transfer portal, that need for that confidence of, oh no, like, this is the best place for you and here's why. That's, I think, a trap that coaches fall into when I talk with athletes and I ask, why did you choose this program of all the places that you could have ended up? Why here? What often comes up is, well, this coach was really transparent with me of, while they think I'm currently the best fit at this position in this way, and this is what they see as possible for my growth and development, they were also very open about the fact that given the transfer portal or given the other people that are going to be my teammates, we don't yet know if that plan is going to be the plan that sticks for the duration of my time with them. So having that humility, modeling that curiosity of, this is what I see, and I'm curious, what do you want? And how do you see that working out for you? Having more of that openness instead of that like confident assuredness that, oh yeah, this is the plan and it's better than any other offer you're going to get out there. That's sometimes a way that this dance between those two polarities might also come up for coaches.
Yeah, I think another application for that for me, JP, is, you know, we're just finishing up our exit interviews at the end of the season here. And for our returning players, there are similar conversations that are happening because they're wondering about what their role could be next year or what they can compete for next year when it comes to trying to fight for a starting position or being in the rotation or getting a varsity jersey, whatever it might be. And the way that we've tried to approach that is, or maybe I should say places that I've screwed that up in the past, is saying, well, here's what I know, you know, it's going to be likely this way. Here's the opportunity in front of you, or here's what we have returning. And either being too rigid in that we've doused some hopes. And so some players have gone in different directions. Some haven't even gone out because we basically said, look, this is the way it's going to be. Or being too wide open and saying, you know, I really don't know. Like, if you just work hard, we'll see what happens in the fall. And that's a little bit too vague at the same time, you know, where there isn't any certainty to it. And I think that doesn't serve our players as well. So the way we've tried to approach it this year is just really outlining to them, here are the things that we know or we feel pretty good about. We have two returning All-State players. I think they're probably going to continue to play a lot, right? So they're going to eat up two spots. You know, we have a big question mark as to who's going to play behind one of those players. And I really don't know exactly who that's going to be, you know, and talking to individual players then about if that was something that you wanted to compete for, here's what it could look like for you, but that might look different for another player. And again, it's going to come down to what makes us the best team going forward. But I think the players have appreciated being able to identify some of the certainties and also some of the question marks that we're going to try to figure out, and then trying to help them figure out where they potentially might fall into that and what work they want to put towards that, if that's, you know, something that they want to try to achieve. And again, it feels a lot like a dance, you know, like it's one step here and it's one step back. And then you're kind of responding a little bit to, you know, whether it's the players or whether it's you talking with parents. And I think that's where it can become so difficult sometimes because it's not a one size fits all, you know, solution here. It really is contextual and it really does vary based on the relationships that you're working with too.
Yeah. And it's, I think for coaches, my encouragement for them was to know when it comes to recruiting or when it comes to players coming out for your program is to have convictions around what you really do know is important, you know, and that's the type of program that you're trying to create, the kind of experience that you're trying to create for the players, how you're going to operate, what you're about, and then to really hand more over to them to be open to what they're looking for. I remember when I was coaching even in high school, oftentimes parents might be coming, you know, considering going to that. We were a private Catholic high school in Tennessee. And so parents would often come up and be like, hey, you know, do you think this is a great place for my kid to come and play basketball? And, you know, not supposed to be recruiting first off in the state of Tennessee, but also it's just, I would just say, listen, I don't actually know what's best for your kid. I do know this is what we're about. Do you have any questions for me? You know, it's just like, what are you looking for? I would ask them, you know, but I just tried to be really curious about what was important to them, what they were looking for. And then I said, well, this is what I'm about. You know your kid, you know what they need, you know what your family needs more than I do. And so I'm leaving that there, but I'm still convicted about the type of coach I'm trying to be and the type of program I'm trying to create. And so I think it's like that dance a little bit, what you were talking about there, Nate.
I think one other place, JP, that this comes out a lot for coaches is just their interactions with their staff. You know, and again, if we think about this as a continuum, I've heard complaints from assistant coaches that their head coach doesn't take any input. They're too stuck in their ways. They're too confident in what works. They don't take another perspective. They don't listen to the players through the assistant coaches. They don't listen to the assistant coaches and try to learn from their experiences. And that can be extremely frustrating. And obviously that's a resource in your program that one would think you'd want to tap into, right? To be able to enhance everyone's experience. And on the other side of that, there are times where, again, just talking to assistant coaches, that they're frustrated when their head coach doesn't seem to stand for anything. They see something on Twitter. They, you know, talk to their latest coaching friend. One assistant coach comes in and says, we should do this. The next assistant coach comes in and says, well, we should do that. And all of a sudden, we don't know what the head coach, you know, what they stand for, what they think, what they're grounded in, what their philosophy in is. And that becomes very difficult, too, because the head coach hasn't done enough to be able to, again, find that place between here's what we stand for and here's what input looks like. And that's another difficult dance sometimes, but I think it's one that is or becomes a trap for coaches.
It is. I mean, this comes up all the time in the work that I do with coaches, Nate, both assistant coaches and head coaches. And I hear it in similar ways that you mentioned. There's assistant coaches who feel like, you know, I don't even know why I'm part of this program. I'm not growing and developing because our coach doesn't ask, our head coach doesn't ask. Or when they do ask, they never actually adopt the ideas that we have. So what's my purpose here? And then I have head coaches that I work with, especially new ones. And these are really thoughtful individuals who want to be so intentional about making sure that their assistants feel that their input is valued and implemented, who then find themselves in a situation where, and this happened recently, a coach has said, you know, I have an assistant telling me I need to do this thing. And I don't want to do that thing. Like, that's not a thing that I feel is part of who I am and how I want to exist in this program. And it called to mind for me, Sue Enquist is a friend and mentor. And at one point years ago, she said to me in conversation, you know, Betts, it's really important to let the main thing be the main thing. And I said, tell me more. What do you mean by that? And she said, anytime you're coaching, especially as a head coach, it's very easy to get distracted by other people's opinions or thoughts about how you should be coaching. And sometimes that shows up from our players as well, of how you should be running our program. She said, pick something and let the main thing be the main thing. So being reminded of that when I was working with this head coach, I said, okay, when it comes to this topic that we're talking about, what's your main thing? And the main thing was, well, when it comes to days off or mental health days, like we can only be at our best when we are all present to train. It's like, okay, so that's your main thing. And now how do you go back to your assistants? And some of the ways I've encouraged coaches to navigate this is once you as the head coach are very clear, whether it's on what your main thing is or what are your negotiables and non-negotiables, now you can shape the conversation. So you can still involve your assistants in the way that you want to. Do it with structure to say, okay, this is what I'd like to do. And I'd like to get your input on how we could do that or when we could do that. So you're still implementing the confidence that you have in what your thing is and what you're about, while also inviting that collaboration that makes your assistants feel like they're also part of the process, but in a very guided way that's not in contrast with what your main thing is.
I think that's a great point. I absolutely love that. I think the other challenge here for coaches in this with their assistant coaches is we have so much oftentimes more experience. We've done more work and research into these decisions, and we have the ones that have the pressure to win. And so oftentimes it can feel like our assistant coaches or players or even parents are just throwing out suggestions without really understanding all the little different pieces that go into it. But to your point there that you shared, Betsy, it reminds me of a conversation I had with a owner of an operator of a Chick-fil-A that I coach. And he had one of his employees come to him with a suggestion the other day. And it, you know, for him, it kind of went against some things that he knew about the process to make sure they get a great score in the health and safety score, right, of the restaurant. But he said at the end of the day, right, if I can step back here, ask some more questions around what they're looking for, what they're hoping can benefit from this change, and then just actually give something up here, control to this person in this situation. Because if we end up getting a 2 instead of a 1 score in the next month, is it the end of the world? No, you know? And so it was just him stepping into something which is giving up a little bit of some maybe of a decision that he had a lot of maybe confidence in. But he said, what's more important, what he really believes and has more conviction about, is developing his people to take ownership of that restaurant and to feel like they have a voice. And so I think that when we have our main thing here, and then we have these other things, that we can sometimes start to maybe be a little bit more humble and say, you know what, I think I know what's best, but this isn't really that important, so I'm going to give this up to this other person here. And I think coaches really have a hard time doing that because we want to make everything the main thing. Now, we're talking about confidence, conviction, curiosity, humility here, and we haven't talked about winning or losing yet. And that's probably the area that it can absolutely rock us as a coach, is the loss to an opponent that we believe is an inferior opponent, or a game that we feel like we should be closer. We just get absolutely, you know, run out of the gym, right? We're totally struggling to even stay competitive in that. That can rock our confidence. Because we're sitting there sometimes wondering what is going on here, what happened. And the same time, we can have maybe some false confidence, right? Or false belief in ourselves there when we have a win, you know, and I think you've seen coaches, there's a little level of like arrogance almost after we've had a few wins, and we don't stay humble. We don't learn from those wins as much as we probably learn from our losses. But, you know, for you as a coach, Nate, this year, I know that you had some ups and some downs there, you know, just in your experience, just even in this season or some previous seasons, where have you seen this struggle for you when it comes to the scoreboard?
Well, I think JP, the biggest trap when it comes to winning and losing, maybe this is just me, but is the whole idea of just resulting. You know, we had a great conversation with Annie Duke a few months back here, where there's such a tendency in the sports world to say, well, because we won, then this works, end of story. It's the only argument, right? Or because we lost, this doesn't work. And then we throw everything out and we start putting in a new offense or a new defense or new way to practice or what have you. And I think my learning in that, I still certainly feel that, especially after a loss, especially as a zone coach in basketball, because I feel like there's already some built-in criticism here that we don't have the courage to play man-to-man. And then somebody hits an open shot to beat us in a close game. And all of a sudden, you know, I go home thinking we should be playing man. Everybody's right. We shouldn't, you know, the critics are right. We shouldn't play zone defense or what have you. But what I've learned in that process, I think, is to see below the surface, you know, and really to identify what are we trying to accomplish with our offense or with our defense, just as an example. One of the things that we've really tried to refocus ourselves on, just when it comes to our systems and strategies, you know, is what do the numbers say? So we lost in the state semifinals this year to a team we might be able to beat 5 or 6 times out of 10, and we just didn't make shots that we normally make. And so again, the tendency is to sit on the long bus ride home in the middle of the night, you know, and think about we're running the wrong stuff, or we're not running enough set plays, or we didn't get the ball to our best players enough. And maybe some of those things are true, but at the end of the day, we have to figure out, well, how do we evaluate that? And so we developed this shot quality scale, and you know, it allows us to go back and say, okay, if these are the shots that we've made at the highest percentage, how many of those shots did we generate in this game, and how many did we just miss, you know, that we might normally make? And in a lot of ways, that first of all provides guidance for us, so that we now have a way to evaluate besides just we lost the game or we won the game, but we're understanding a little bit of the process that goes into it. And it creates language for our players so that they can have conversation about, you know, what we're trying to achieve and how we are getting closer to that or farther away from that.
And Nate, what I love what you just shared there is you're talking about a process for how you review and reflect. And I don't feel like enough coaches have that. And what happens is you have a really bad loss, and all of a sudden, you know, the players start questioning, the assistant coaches start questioning, you start questioning, and you start just questioning everything and hitting the panic button. But when you have a great after action review process, hot review right after the game to the day later, and how you break down film and you say, this is how we will reflect on the game, win or lose, win by 20, lose by 20, whatever it is, and you stick to that process, the improvement is in more so, okay, what about our review process isn't working for us, right? Not necessarily trying to tackle and look at every aspect of your program that might be failing you. It's just trying to constantly refine your review process. And I think that's exactly what you have done with that data stuff. And I think you've done and built that, and you've refined your review process over the years. And so that your review process is giving you the information that you need when it comes to player conversations, staff meetings, film reviews, analytics, right? You're bringing that all together. What's in a reflection process that's going to work for us, win or lose?
And as I'm hearing both of you talk, there's this convergence that's happening for me around, you know, we talk about the polarity of confidence and humility, of certainty and curiosity. And we've used that metaphor of, you know, there's this middle way that's kind of like a dance. And I think about partner dancing. And typically, if you have two people dancing, one of them is in charge of leading. And I think the invitation for coaches here is to stop letting the results lead. Stop letting the scoreboard lead. We talk about a humbling loss. Okay, what if we were to humble ourselves in the moments we win? And not falsely of, you know, giving credit to another team or you know, making less of our accomplishments. But as coaches, we're so focused on the part of our job that necessitates we figure out what's not working or what's wrong and fix it. What if in not letting the scoreboard lead, anytime we won, we were very intentional about saying, okay, I'm confident we did this well, and I'm curious what it would look like if we were to shift or change this. Versus just being like, oh, that was a win, so everything must be working. Like, it's all good. And there's that phrase, winning is a great deodorant. Same thing in a loss. Like, I'm curious about what would happen if we make this change, and I'm confident that this is something that served us well and that we're going to hold on to. So if we can stop letting the resulting, the scoreboard, the outcome dictate where we are in that polarity between confidence and humility, I think we might find ourselves in a place that gives us more valuable information to really drill down into what is most important and how can we find success in between these two extremes.
So I think we've really been talking a lot about how we can try to integrate these more as a coach, you know, both of these poles here. So my question now is there times where we need to really lean just hard into one or the other in coaching that you guys can think of? The times where you and your own experience as a coach, or when you've looked at other coaches where you said, hey, this is a moment where you got to be all about conviction, right? This is not the time for questions, or this is the time where you got to really step back. Like, what are some of those moments that maybe integration isn't always necessarily the best approach?
JP, this came up very recently. There's a program that I work with. They've had two ACL tears within 10 days of each other. And the conversation I had with the coaches is what's needed. And this individual was very caught between, do they need my certainty? Because there is this overarching fear of, oh my gosh, like, am I next? You know, is the training that we've switched to going to result in me having a similar injury? Despite the fact that the training that they've switched to has also yielded very positive results in areas that they were looking to grow in. So the coach's question is, do they need my certainty to reassure them that they're okay, that these are uncontrollable events that could have happened at any time, irregardless of the training that we're doing? Or do they need my curiosity? Do they need me to show up in the next team meeting and say, hey, what's coming up for you all? Because I know if I were playing, I might be questioning, like, am I next? And what we landed on was, and this individual knows their team very well, they went with curiosity. And when I followed up, they said, you know, I opened up the space for them to say whatever was true for them. And despite my felt need that what they would benefit most from is my reassurance, my certainty, what they said was very helpful and supportive was my asking what was true for them. And so I think that's one of those situations when there's fear, we might feel a need to lead more with maybe certainty to reassure people, when what's possible is if we lean hard the other way, we might get a different, maybe more supportive result.
Yeah, JP, I think, you know, there's this phrase in coaching, if you love the process enough, the process will love you back. But there's a time delay oftentimes in that, you know, and when you're building or you're starting or you're getting just the initial investments in a process for improvement, sometimes there is a delay before there's a payback, you know, in that. And I think in those times, you know, I've been doing this for a while, right? So I know that our teams at Mount Vernon have really found assurance knowing that, look, we've done this before. We've done this in other places. This has worked. It takes time. Stay to the process, right? Stay the course. And I think sometimes in that certainty, you know, that allows them to buy some more time for those investments to have a return.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. So often, you know, when you've set course and you're moving forward, the players start doubting, and they will feed off our energy. They'll like right in that process, hey, no, it's okay. We're acknowledging their fears. We're acknowledging some of their doubts, but our own energy, our conviction. I even think about in the moment of a big game, right? There's a timeout or there's some sort of opportunity for you to call a play or work with your team. It's probably not the moment for, you know, a lot of curiosity and humility, right? And then, hey, there may be a moment where, you know, ask a question around their perspective on something here, but the most times they need at least feel such strong conviction energy off of us, you know, and that can help to breed confidence and conviction into our team. And at the same time, I think there's other times within a culture where you're going to go through difficulties like Betsy just shared there. You're going to go through things, and there's going to be times where you have to just lean into real humility and saying, I'm stumped. I need your help. I think about it. I know it's a movie, but I think about Remember the Titans, and one of my favorite moments in Remember the Titans is, you know, Coach Boone, and I forget the other assistant coach's name, but the assistant coach is running the defense, and finally he just turns to Coach Boone. He just says, Coach, I need your help. I can't figure him out. This team's kicking my butt. And I just think that's such a cool moment of just like humility, laying it down here. He didn't need to stay, you know, confident or convicted. Just opening up and having that vulnerability to be humble just took their relationship and the trust to a whole nother level.
I just want to add one more here too, JP, that we've really leaned into this year. And that is, again, we talk about these touch points with our players. It's not just pre-practice, but another thing that I've done a lot this year after competitive games, win or lose, is just checking in with every player at some point in the next 12 hours after the game. And so when we have boy-girl doubleheaders and they're watching, I'll just work the bleachers and sit down with them and just get two thoughts about the game. If everybody takes off after the game, I'll text them and just say, hey, before noon tomorrow, just send me two thoughts about, you know, how you thought the game went last night. And that part where it's kind of opening up really has helped me to understand where the stories are being told and what stories are being told, right, in terms of how they're framing a close loss or a close win. And that really has given us great information then when we get into our next team meeting of how then do we need to mold that to most benefit us moving forward. Well, JP, as we kind of wrap this conversation up here, I think there's two things that really come to mind for me just as advice for coaches, especially leaning into the more humility, vulnerability, curiosity side of the spectrum, because I just think that's the part that we struggle to feel comfortable or confident, ironically enough, in. And two things that have really helped us, we've already talked about one of them here, but we've gotten into the habit of really sharing how we got here. Meaning, if we're going to choose this defensive strategy, rather than just telling our kids, well, we're going to make these two adjustments because we think it'll take this person away, we back it up and say, because we've seen this in film, or we show them a couple of examples, or we're playing this strategy because we traced the breadcrumbs that got us to this point. I think that's a really important piece of transparency that is a mixture of both confidence, and it also invites understanding and questions from your team. When we don't know the answer. So I remember one year we were trying to figure out how to implement some full court pressure, and we had a couple of different options. And we did the same thing. Here's why we want to do what we want to do. Here's what we want to accomplish. Here's a couple of options. Pause. I don't know which one's the best for us. Let's talk about it, right? And so as a team, we kicked around the advantages and disadvantages. Because I think just sharing, here's kind of what we know, so to speak, that gets us to this point, and here's what we're not sure about, is a really inviting way to balance both of these two polarities. The other thing I would just encourage coaches to do is just ask. Just have more of these little touch points where you're just asking for, as you guys keep saying, everyone's truth, their perspective, how they're framing a game or a practice or a drill or something that we're trying for the first time or something that we're doing for the thousandth time. I just can't tell you how important that's been for us, especially this year, to just lean into little moments of curiosity. Tell me what you think about this, about that, about the other. I have no agenda other than I'm trying to gather more information. This is not a decision-making meeting. I just want to know what you're seeing. And not only does it make us better decision makers, it makes the relationships and those connections so much more valuable if you do that consistently. And I know that's not always easy for coaches, but find little ways to just ask.
And building off that invitation, Nate, the invitation that I would add for coaches is, and this shows up very specifically in women's sports, there's this phrase out there now, she can do both, right? Because for so long, it's like, oh, you're either very girly, very feminine, or you're very athletic. And there's so many different examples in women's sports today of women who do both. And so if you find yourself at any point in your career as a coach being pushed to one polarity or another, to remind yourself that you can do both. And am I practicing doing both? Do I lean more heavily naturally to confidence or, you know, that certainty? And where might it benefit me, as you're mentioning, Nate, to just ask and model more of that humility? So am I currently a coach who can do both, knowing that I might choose to lean into one or another, but do I feel like I have the skillful ability to make that choice?
Coaches, do not forget to subscribe to the TOC newsletter every Thursday. You'll receive a short article, and you'll also receive the notes to each episode of the podcast, as well as our top 10 podcast episodes and my top 10 articles. Subscribe using the link in the description of this episode, or simply go to tocculture.com and click on newsletter. Thank you for listening in. Please be sure to share this episode if you found it valuable, as well as leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts.